Bugle, audio newspaper for a visual world.
Hello, buglers, and sit up straight, I'm f***ing talking to you. Take your sunglasses off, stop chewing gum, now drop and give me 20. Oh, that was fast. Welcome to issue 153 of The Adventures of Little Joe Stalin. This week, the 9-year-old future Soviet despot goes to school and is sent out from his biology class with some of his classmates to collect soil samples from a woodland clearing. He returns alone with a moustache and a look in his eye that unmistakably says, "Right, who wants to be next? I trust I can rely on your support for me as form captain." So I'm getting my recordings mixed up again. Bloody Kremlin, always double-booking me. Welcome to The Bugle. I'm Andy Zaltzman, live in London and in New York City, the man who just has to look at an egg to scramble it these days. It's the man who is to computer programming what Sarah Palin is to Africa. He's possibly aware of its existence, but doesn't really understand it or think about it much. It's the human Messerschmitt himself, John Oliver.
Hello, Andy. Hello, buglers. Andy, I've got to say, I ran into a couple of buglers on the street over the past few days, and it seems like the phrase "f*** eulogy" that we coined last week...
You coined, John. I think I cannot take any of the credit for that.
That I coined to deal with the obituary of Bin Laden has struck something of a chord with people. It's quite an awkward conversation to have with someone on the street as people pass, hearing it out of context. So much so, I think I might have introduced an important new word into the English lexicon, Andy. Perhaps this should now be a refillable segment for the Bugle from now on. Whenever someone dies, who in no capacity will be missed, we should deliver a f***ing eulogy on their behalf. Obviously, you don't want to overuse it. You want to be absolutely sure that someone qualifies for an official f***ing eulogy, or it will start to lose some of its power.
Yep.
They need to have absolutely no redeeming qualities whatsoever to be honoured as a recipient.
So, I do hope it makes it into a dictionary. I think that you'll be able to consider your life well-lived if you die in the knowledge that f***ing eulogy is now an official word.
It's already more than I was ever expecting.
I had a bizarre experience last Saturday, Buglers. I went to a charity cricket dinner, courtesy of the comedian Rory Bremner, who I do some writing for, who does a lot of cricket stuff. And anyway, Eric Clapton was doing the music at it.
Holy moly.
So I was...
When you say doing the music, was he playing his iPod? Was he DJ? Here's to Unlimited. Eric, this is not what we brought you here for. Never mind. Y'all ready for this?
So he was acting out some chops on his magic guitar, and I was standing about 10 feet away by the side of the stage.
Holy
with
shit.
And he was in the middle of some flamboyant guitar solo, and I turned around, and behind me, standing on a table, was the former England cricketer, Alan Lamb, gyrating on the table, swinging his jacket around.
Oh,
that was a surreal moment.
Yeah, that's quite an image.
So, that was a
Alan
good
Lamb,
evening.
Is Alan Lamb not another person who's been very thrilled to play for England, Andy?
Absolutely,
you're
John. Absolutely.
Always been my dream to play for England, you're...
So, it was a fun evening. Yeah, you know, and not every day you either get to see Eric Clapton playing in, you know, very close proximity, or see Alan Lamb table dancing.
It's the perfect storm.
And also this week, here's another very exciting story, John. Even more exciting. This morning, this very morning, Friday the 13th of May, 2011, my daughter told her first ever joke.
Really?
Yeah.
What was it?
Well, she said, "Daddy, I'm going to tell you a joke now." And I said, "OK, what's your joke?" And she went, "Why did the fox cross the road?"
OK.
Because it wanted to climb up the tree. There you go, something to work on. And then she then went in with, "Why did the shirt climb up the tree?" Because it wanted to play with the sausage. So there you've got a bit of... I mean, that's pretty strong.
Now it's getting funny.
That's a bit of, you know, bit of surrealism then.
But why did the shirt cross the road? Was it to get to the tree? To climb the tree?
No.
To play with the sausage?
No, you're mixing them up now. It's why did the fox cross the road? Because it wanted to climb up the tree.
And why did the shirt climb the tree?
Why did the shirt climb up the tree? Because it wanted to play with the sausage.
So the only loose end yet to be tied there is, why the f*** was the sausage up the tree?
Yeah. Well, I guess that's the thing. She's leaving those open. That's up to the audience to complete the dots. That's what they were. Then she went with waiter.
She's the David Lynch of comedians.
She went with a waiter joke next.
Okay.
She says, waiter, yeah, there's a picture in my throat. But it didn't really have a punchline. I think that's just the image, really, that's
yeah.
And then...
Right. What picture was it?
She didn't specify. She moved straight
Was
on.
It ex-Mets flame out Oli Perez?
Oh, no, picture, not picture.
Oh, I thought picture.
You know, CC Sabathia. No, it was a picture, but no, I don't know what kind of picture. Right. Maybe it was picture, actually. I'll have to ask her. She's not much of a ball fan, to be honest. Then she went with her closer. There once was a house, and the house had a crocodile in it, and the crocodile ate everyone. And I said, all right, why is that funny? And she said, because at the end, the crocodile did a burp.
That is funny!
There you
She's
go.
Right!
It's a timeless classic.
It would have been horrific. It would have been absolutely horrific. Can you imagine a crocodile eating an entire house full of people? Turning up to that scene, it's probably blood and dismembered bones everywhere. But then, if that crocodile looks at you with a cheeky expression in his eyes and does a burp, I challenge you not to laugh.
Well, that's pretty much... I think it's basically a satirical reworking of the Bin Laden hit, basically, with the crocodile representing America. And a satisfied belch at the end. So it's a bit of satire. That's
good,
genetics,
good
isn't it? That's genetics.
Yeah.
That's come straight from her mother. This week we have the return of the Soundproof Safe. In the Soundproof Safe this week is the former Al-Qaeda social secretary, Mickey Al-Kalwala, who will not be telling us exactly why, when the Navy SEALs burst into his boss's love nest, Bin Laden was wearing a black leather miniskirt, a pink blouse with false palpatoots underneath, and high-heeled shoes, hoovering and singing, "I want to break free." There is some explaining to be done from Al-Qaeda, and I guess we should just say for the man, it's never nice to die with regrets. And in the bin this week, the Frugal Bugle. Some money-saving tips in these straitened times, including how to save money on those unnecessary private helicopter trips. Maybe only use the chopper one way, apart from for really important meetings. Economising on your yachts or yachts. Let's face it, a marble hull might look great, but it isn't the most buoyant of substances. How few butlers can you get away with without losing face? And why spend £800 on a bottle of vintage champagne when you can get perfectly passable bubbly these days for only 500 quid a bottle? Plus, why solid gold casts of your beloved pets are not just a lovely memento, but a sound long-term investment. Chris, are you absolutely sure the research we've had done into our listener demographics is right? It just doesn't seem to fit.
Top story this week, non-Bin Laden royal wedding news. Andy, it's hard to believe, but events have taken place over the last few weeks that weren't either the royal wedding or the death of Osama Bin Laden. I know that's hard to believe, and you'd had every right to say to me, John, that's one hell of a claim. Prove it to me. Show me footage from the news over the last few weeks of anything other than those two stories. And honestly, Andy, I just have to ask you to trust me. Other things have happened, and we're going to look at a few of them now.
Hang on, is one of them Pippa Middleton's arse? Or does that count? Is that now separate from the royal wedding?
That counts in both of those stories I just mentioned.
Okay, right.
One, it was part of the wedding, and two, it meant Bin Laden was happy to die at that point. He'd seen it all.
Had he?
First,
all of it?
Libya news! It's tempting, Andy, to think that because we killed Bin Laden, everything must be fine now. It's like the classic plot twist at the end of fairy tales, when you kill the witch and all the people that she's turned into statues and trees come back to life, all confused about what's just happened to them. It lowers the body count at the end of stories so that children can sleep at night without dreaming of Hansel and Gretel walking home through a mountain of corpses. And that is what you want to happen here. You want jihadists to be stumbling into the daylight, rubbing their eyes, saying, I had the weirdest dream that I just spent the last decade being a total dick. Similarly, you also wanted Colonel Gaddafi to wake up confused on Monday morning, look blearily into his mirror and shout out, "Oh my God! Can someone please explain to me why I look like this? What the f*** have I been doing over the last 4 decades? Hold on, I've been doing what? You're kidding me! Why would I do that? Well, if that's true, why hasn't anyone tried to kill me? They have! They're trying to right now! Well, how do we stop them? I have only 12 hours to convince the world that I'm no longer a murderous despot. That sounds like the plot for an incredible summer blockbuster action comedy. If I ever make it out of this predicament alive, I'm going to see it as my life's mission to make that movie. Now, can someone please get me the President of America on the phone? He's what? He's black? Oh, I don't know. Something clearly isn't right here. I'm going back to bed. Unfortunately, Andy, none of that has happened, and Gaddafi is still very much alive, still very much crazy, and is still treating the rebel-held town of Misrata like a wasp-filled piñata. The Libyan conflict seems to have ground to a stalemate, with Gaddafi in control of most of the west of the country and the rebels in control of the east and a few volatile pockets of the west. Unfortunately, there doesn't seem to be a clear strategy from NATO as to what the next move should be. The United States has apparently been providing the rebels with help, delivering its first shipment of food rations as part of a, and I quote, $25 million non-lethal aid package. Look, Andy, I know we're not officially arming the rebels, but can we not do a slightly better job of disguising what we're actually doing than that? What form does this non-lethal aid package take? Is it, by chance, a massive cake that looks suspiciously like a storage crate full of weapons with icing smeared all over it?
Or it could be one of those Peter the Great-style cakes that has armed dwarves in that are going to burst out and lead the rebellion.
True. That would be even more useful.
Or it could be some really pointy carrots that can be used as javelins.
It seems to be increasingly clear that the situation is not going to be resolved without Gaddafi, to put it bluntly, not being alive anymore. But how do you do that? NATO don't have a UN resolution to authorise the assassination of Gaddafi, so they basically need to hope for, or plan for, an accident. And I have a few suggestions, Andy, that I think might work. One, exploding beret. Now... I know he doesn't technically wear berets, Gaddafi, but he does seem like the kind of guy who, if he saw a beret lying on the ground, would be physically unable not to pick it up and try it on. OK, suggestion number two, exploding sombrero. To be honest, it's basically the same reasoning behind the first one, just an even higher likelihood of it working.
And also, if that happens, it would probably... I mean, he'd probably lift off the ground as well. I mean, that's got better aerodynamic qualities than the beret. It's basically like
that.
It's a poor man's...
Proving that he was dead.
It's a poor man's helicopter.
Yeah. Three. Final suggestion, Andy. Find out if he has any allergies. If so, carpet bomb Tripoli with honey-roasted peanuts. That way, you're assassinating Gaddafi and airdropping much-needed aid at the same time. It is the perfect non-war crime. But one of the weirdest things
coming
out of Libya...
Surely, you've got to go for the exploding Ukrainian nurse.
Well, I can't believe I didn't think of that.
that's the obvious. That's the go-to play, John. He cannot resist. I mean, it will have to be a voluptuous one.
Yeah.
I guess you could fit two bombs in then. But and blonde. Voluptuous blonde and Ukrainian. And a nurse. Bang. Boom. Kaboom.
Job done.
Job very much done.
Yeah, the strangest story coming out of Libya has been of Gaddafi loyalists shooting at cats. Apparently, there have been sightings of stray cats... I quote, parading around with the opposition flag painted on their bodies. Now, firstly, Andy, were they really parading? Were those cats actually parading? Or were they really just wandering aimlessly around the streets looking for food? Because if they were actually parading, then this is a different story completely. If the stray cats were marching tightly in formation through the streets of Tripoli with the opposition flag on their bodies and paint all over their little paws from putting the flags on each other, then I think the loyalists are probably right to be suspicious. Apparently the cats have been unsuccessfully chased and shot at by angry security agents and secret police who work in the Souk al-Jumaha and the Janzour areas where the cats have been spotted. But what I'm saying, Andy, is perhaps this brutality is all that the cats need. just like it was the Tunisian dissident setting fire to himself that sparked the revolutions that spread across the Middle East. Perhaps the treatment of these cats will now lead to a feline awakening across the region. Cats attacking despots, demanding their nation's freedom. And when you think about it, cats have already breached most security perimeters for dictators. So many of the world's most famous villains have been fond of sitting in swivel chairs stroking cats. This clearly shows that cats have agents on the inside. Trojan cats, if you will. Who knows? Maybe there's a Siamese member of Cat Special Forces right now, currently in Gaddafi's lap, getting ready to scratch his balls off.
Moving east a bit to Syria, where things are similarly kicking off, but because we are tied up in Libya, we can do absolutely jack shit about it. And the Syrian government has taken a bit of time out from brutally cracking down on its own people to defer its attempt to run for a seat on the United Nations Human Rights Council. Now, right. You would have thought this was quite a bold move to run for it in the first place. I guess there must have been some high-level discussions in the Syrian government on this one. So, folks, our Human Rights Council bid, are we really jockeying for position in the most effective way? I mean, hammering down on protests with a no-holds-barred orgy of state violence, is that really putting our best human rights face forward for the world? So maybe they've gone back to the drawing board. Perhaps, to be charitable, at best, Syria is having communications difficulties in demonstrating its human rights credentials to the rest of the world. That's, I guess, the positive way of looking at it. Unless, John, it is trying to get on the council to provide a bit of philosophical balance. Because most on this Human Rights Council, presumably, are generally in favour of human rights. And maybe Syria thinks, hang on, these guys need to hear both sides of this barbecue. So they're very much going on. I mean, I personally, John, I don't know about you, but I love my human rights. Can't get enough of them. In fact, I try and use at least 25 a day. I'm using them right now. In fact, you wouldn't believe how many I'm using. My right to free speech, my right to say c**t. Chris there exercising his right to stop me saying c**t. I'm also exercising my right to record a podcast whilst holding a bucket full of eels. And my right to dress up like the Queen and threaten people with an axe. Chris. But not everyone is quite such a fan of human rights. President Bashir, one of the few world leaders who wouldn't have to change his name on becoming a pro wrestler, is one of them. But maybe, John, he would hit back and say, actually, he is the biggest fan of human rights of all. Because not only does he allow his people the right to protest, but he also allows his military the right to kill those protesters. So maybe he is the true libertarian here, John. Because as Martin Luther King himself said, human rights are like a cucumber. It's got two ends. If you put one end in your mouth, you have to be prepared for someone else to jab the other end in your eye.
You're right. It's unclear why exactly they were applying for a place on the Human Rights Council. I have a few more possible reasons. Maybe it was a joke. Maybe they were joking. Maybe Saudi Arabia dared them to do it. Maybe they'd heard the Human Rights Council does a nice buffet lunch and were anxious to try it. Or maybe it was a mistake, Andy, and they thought they were applying for the UN Human Fights Council. It's the fist fight club that meets in the UN basement every Thursday night at midnight. Well, maybe... First rule of Human Fights Council, do not talk about Human Fights Council.
Maybe, John, the other alternative is that the Syrians merely thought, big fans of 1980s and early 90s pop music, and they thought they were applying for tickets for a one-off charity gig done by the Human League, Right Said Fred, and the Style Council in their new three-pronged unified form.
That is possible.
Let's not rule that out, John. Let us not rule that out.
Sadly, Syria remains relatively low on the top honeymoon destinations around the world chart at the moment. I'm not saying it wouldn't be a holiday you'd remember. I've not crossed it off, but my pen is certainly twitching over the name. I'm not saying it wouldn't be a holiday you'd remember. I'm saying it'd be a holiday you'd spend a lot of money in therapy trying to forget. In the very best case scenario, your pictures would be shaky. And thousands of people have reportedly been arrested and hundreds killed in government crackdowns on protesters. The Syrian government insists that it's pursuing armed terrorist gangs, who it seems they are convinced are somehow hiding inside the bodies of unarmed peaceful protesters. And it does, as you say, seem at best, a very odd time for Syria to be applying for membership of the Human Rights Council. Under the UN resolution that established the Human Rights Council in 2006, member nations are expected to uphold the highest standards of human rights. And perhaps Syria's argument is that they're upholding the highest standards they can. They're giving it 100%. They know they're not the most naturally talented when it comes to not committing mass human rights violations. But regardless, Andy, they go out every day with hustle, loyalty and respect on their sleeve. And blood as well. Blood on their sleeve as well. The only thing they're guilty of is trying too hard and shooting unarmed protesters. But is that a crime? Yes, it is. But should it be? Definitely. Are we sure about that? 100% sure. Okay, then.
So you're basically saying that Syria is the Neil Redfern of human rights. And for people who didn't follow journeyman footballers in England in the 1990s, look him up on the internet. Always gave it 110, Redfern, to be fair. Ignore all the relegations.
Apparently Kuwait has taken Syria's place now and will join India, Indonesia and the Philippines as the new potential Asian entrants on the council. Good luck to all the nominees, Andy. I'm sure it was just an honour to find yourself among such an esteemed group.
Well, I mean, it's a slightly surprised nomination in itself, Kuwait. In the last 6 months, they have jailed a writer for criticising the Prime Minister, forcibly dispersed a political gathering at a private house, hospitalising some of the victims, shut down Al Jazeera's Kuwait office because it didn't like the way it reported on stuff, detained dozens of stateless residents after a protest, and been credited by the Human Rights Watch organisation with, quote, a major crackdown on freedom of expression and assembly in the year 2010. So they don't seem to be... I mean, they are better qualified than Syria, John, but it's still out of the frying pan into the fire, admittedly out of a massive, heavy-based, overheated, oil-spitting frying pan into a relatively, by comparison, small-scale fire. But still, it's still a fire, John. Still a fire.
Syria will be allowed to apply again in 2 years, so I guess that they're basically relying on members of the UN Council having exactly 23-month memories. Bin Laden update now, and, well, key update, he's still dead. Or still on the run. Or he's been bitten by a radioactive plankton, eaten by a killer whale, and is currently jumping through hoops in front of screaming children at Orlando SeaWorld. Those are the three most popular theories on the internet at the moment, Andy.
But they found his diary, and or journal, or whatever you want to call it, and that's quite exciting. Most of the recent entries include rather wistful ramblings about Pippa Middleton's arse cheeks.
Oh, Pippa.
Some limericks.
Oh,
including a variation on There Was an Old Man from Nantucket. And also Bin Laden included his to-do list that included fixed cistern on upstairs toilet, book dentist appointment, cancel Amal's subscription to Cosmopolitan. Oh, who's a bit of a controlling husband? Destroy the West and train 150 chickens to do a motorcycle pyramid. So, got to use those chickens, John. If you've got 150 chickens, you've got to make them work. There have been newspaper reports, John, detailing the, quote, extraordinary lengths that Bin Laden went to communicate with his Al-Qaeda buddies around the world, including, get this, he got someone else to take stuff to an internet cafe and communicate with them from there. What a Machiavellian genius, John.
Oh,
it's just
God,
amazing.
He's so smart.
How did he think of that? It's amazing. That's what
it shows what we were up against, yeah. Andy. We didn't stand a chance with that kind of thinking on the table.
Also used a courier not only to do his emails and update his Facebook status, which was mostly stroppy about the way global history has panned out, but also to put on his eBay bids. And the Navy SEALs found a collection of action men, 180 of them in his playroom in Abbottabad, mostly with big beards drawn on in marker pen. So.
President Obama went on 60 Minutes last week to give credit for the mission to the Navy SEALs, the intelligence teams, and to just about everyone else in the country, saying, "It was a moment of great pride for me to see our capacity as a nation to execute something this difficult, this well." That's very kind of him, Andy, but this was really nothing to do with the American public as a whole. And I think they'd be first to admit that their capacity as a nation mainly revolves around how many marshmallows they can fit in their mouths.
Yeah, but the two are linked, John, aren't they? You can't have one without the other.
Yeah, that's fair. In an interesting development, members of the Bush administration here have been anxious to claim that the credit for gathering the information leading to bin Laden's death should really be going to waterboarding, and the credit for that should really be going to George W. Bush, as he was, after all, the man with water on his hands. So, in their minds, that is the most important takeaway from the bin Laden operation, Andy, that it is conclusive proof that waterboarding was a good thing. The argument is that they got a code name for the courier that led to them to Osama from a mid-level operative through enhanced interrogation. Therefore, they say waterboarding works. However, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed was waterboarded 183 times and lied, denying ever having heard of the courier. Therefore, you might think that means waterboarding doesn't work. Well, apparently not, Andy, because they, in turn, argue that the very fact he denied knowing who this person was proved that the courier was someone important, meaning that waterboarding works, Andy. So that's the equation. When you waterboard someone, either they talk, thereby proving that waterboarding works, or they don't talk, and you don't get that information, which actually also works, meaning effectively waterboarding can't not work. You have to admit, that is some logical brilliance, Andy. They did some Kama Sutra moves on those facts, bending them into all kinds of weird positions before they f***ed them. I tell you what else did that. The actions of your f***ing dad. He in no way did a great job of promoting the good of the bin Laden family name during his lifetime. In fact, during future job interviews for bin Laden's son, the questions following this, the discovery of his surname are not going to primarily revolve around the appropriateness of sea burial.
Well, I guess it's a phase of life that we all go through, John. When, you know, when we're growing up, our parents are sort of flawless heroes, and then the older we get, the more we see that they're not that perfect, and they have their flaws, and in a way it makes us love them even more. But I guess, arguably, as a father, Osama bin Laden was a little too flawed, and maybe his son is just struggling to come to terms with that.
Yeah, that could be it.
Yeah. We've got some exclusive diary entries that have been leaked from the Pentagon, from bin Laden's journal, that I thought I'd share with you, including this one. 11th of July 2010. Watched the World Cup final today. Well done, Spain. They held their nerve under pressure. Shows what good teamwork can do. That Mark Van Bommel, though, what a monster. I do not endorse his style of football. I so wanted to go on an internet forum and discuss it with the other fans, but I just couldn't. I couldn't even ring A-Man to talk about what a lovely player Andres Iniesta is. My lifestyle's so restricted these days. Not what I've been led to believe being CEO of a multinational brand would involve. I feel trapped. Amal, my wife, says it's just a midlife crisis thing I'm going through. Maybe I need a change of scene, but I mean, that would be logistically awkward at best. Moving house is stressful at the best of times. And for a guy like me, well, oh, don't get me started. Plus, the property market these days, you can barely even buy a two-bed maisonette in the Swat Valley for less than 250k, let alone a fully fortified secret compound in a major military town. 1st of January 2011. Another year passed. Another year in which I haven't really diversified my skills portfolio. Spent a lot of time recently thinking about where my life's going. Not very far is the answer. I've been in this game too long. 10 years is what they say, isn't it? 10 years, then move on. Amal says I'm borderline unemployable, though. She can really cut to the quick sometimes. She says I'm a bad role model, but she just regurgitates whatever she reads in the newspapers. I guess I could make a living on the after-dinner circuit, but I'd have to keep it low-key. I know I'm not everyone's cup of tea. I know that, but I could probably make a go of it on the corporate gigs. They just want a name there, but anyway, I'm unhappy. I'm really unhappy. Maybe I need a few more wives. That's what Daddy always used to swear by. I wonder what Whitney Houston's up to these days. Oh, well, ho-hum. I need to sort myself out. I want to break free. Ah, there you go, there it is. Mickey, we're starting to piece it together. I guess the signs are always there. He always had that Freddie Mercury moustache, didn't he? It was just always camouflaged by the rest of his facial hair. Anyway, these are towards the end now. 20th of April, 2011. Been having fantasies about playing a round of golf. Man, I need to get out of this place. 22nd of April, 2011. Just listen to the Bugle's Royal Wedding Special. What a pair of infidel losers. They should have some f***ing respect for their social superiors. Pricks. 1st of May 2011. More escape fantasies. I dreamt I was a dolphin swimming in the open seas. How ironic does that sound now?
Oh, God.
And finally, 2nd of May 2011. Hastily written. Yippee, I think the guys have sorted out my belated birthday present. Live private gig by Phil Collins. I can hear his helicopters landing in the garden now. This is going to be awesome. I can feel him coming in the air tonight. Boom! He better put more effort in than Nelly Furtado did that last year. She just f***ing phoned it in. That was the last entry. Last entry.
Oh, that's a fascinating glimpse into a life, Andy. Just fascinating.
Bugle feature section now, and wine. Later on in the section, we'll be telling you how to make your own wine on a budget. Buy some grapes from a supermarket, put them in a food processor, pour some vodka in, bingo. That's how they do it in Bulgaria. Also warning about the latest health scares, including drinking wine whilst skiing could be dangerous, drinking wine whilst flying a helicopter advisable only with a specially adapted helmet, never slug shabbily direct from the bottle while sitting precariously on the edge of a grain silo, and if you're a surgeon and you're going to drink wine whilst operating on someone, make sure that you drink good stuff. Pull the cork out of a £35 bottle of Chateau Lafite and your patient's going to think, this guy knows what he's doing. Unscrew the lid on a £3.49 bottle of Bulgarian Merlot and you have a patient who's running out the hospital with his intravenous drip still attached and a nurse chasing him with a needle full of anaesthetic, shouting, come back, come back. I was only joking when I called you Mr. Pincushion.
In other wine news, rival wine cellars targeting overworked mothers are squabbling over the use of the word mommy on their wine labels. California-based winery asked the court to declare that its mommy juice does not violate the trademark of Mommy's Time Out, which is made by a New Jersey distributor of wine from the classic New Jersey vineyards, the Jersey grapes.
Chateau sexism.
Apparently, the front label of Mommy Juice features the drawing of a woman juggling a house, teddy bear and a computer. And the back label advises moms to tuck your kids into bed, sit down and have a glass of Mommy Juice because you deserve it. Now, apparently, the front label of Mommy's Time Out, which is an Italian wine sold in both red and white, shows an empty chair facing a corner. A wine bottle and glass sit on a table next to the chair. Much bleaker image for Mommy's Time Out. But I'm suggesting it could get even bleaker, Andy, because now that it's open season on this, I plan to release a wine myself, which has a label featuring a mother passed out in the middle of her child's fourth birthday party, with kids laughing, crying, and filming her with their phones. And the wine is going to be called Easy on the Mommy Sauce.
God, how did you hear about Matilda's birthday party? Now, John, I'm as up for cynical marketing ploys as anyone. I mean, why do you think we call this podcast The Bugle? Because we like bugles? No, it's because we knew bugles would be tooted at the royal wedding, and you cannot put a price on that quality of subliminal brand promotion.
That's true.
But Mommy Juice, John, I think that might be taking it one step too far. When particularly you look at their advertising campaign, regret the way your life has gone, trapped in an inescapable bind of parental responsibility in a loveless marriage, tired, irritable and despairing of the future, hate your children and husband but feel unable to break away, try wine. With the twin benefits of short-term oblivion and long-term life-shortening disease, wine can ease all your problems now and for the future. Wine. Find refuge in the annihilating arms of alcohol. Go on, Mum. You deserve it. Best tried with an affair. Your emails now, and this comes in on the subject weirdest place I listen to The Bugle, which is proving quite a productive theme for emails. I do keep sending them in to thebugle@timesonline.co.uk, and this one comes from Richard, who writes, on the subject of odd places to listen to The Bugle, the place I listen is neither remote nor dangerous, but it is potentially comical. I work for an adult toy manufacturer and often listen to The Bugle on my lunch hour in a building filled with colourful silicone phalli. That's right, as I listen to you potentially read this email, I'll likely be enjoying a curry with any number of dildos and vibrators easily within my reach and a warehouse full of marital aids less than 5 steps away. By the transitive property, your podcast is being heard by the nether regions of thousands of people. Please enjoy that image. How's that for weird?
That's pretty weird. Pretty weird. That's a strong entry.
Well, I like the fact that the Bugle is osmosing into...
there's another great email here from Dom, who says, "Dear Lord Zaltzman, Baroness Oliver and Mr. Chris, 1 month ago," he says, "I was listening to the Bugle on a motorised canoe."
This is already good.
Yes.
Just the word motorised canoe. That's what, yes.
"Holding on for dear life as we surged over rapids in a remote region of Indonesian Borneo, in preparation for a four-month scientific expedition to survey the flora and fauna of a never-before-studied rainforest ecosystem. These motorised canoes are called locally Klotoks, supposedly after the sound that the engines make. However, after listening to the Bugle, I became more and more convinced that the sound of the engines made was not, in fact, Klotok, but honky-tonk badonkadonk. When I attempted to explain this to the indigenous communities that lived along the river in my faltering Indonesian, I was met with total and utter confusion. However, I remain hopeful that somehow the idea will spread, and somewhere in the remote jungles of Borneo, there'll be a group of indigenous Dayak peoples all simultaneously renaming their boats Honky Tonk! Badonkadonk! Yours sincerely, Dom." Excellent. Excellent.
It's what Trace Adkins would want.
He goes on to say, "In the relatively likely event that we find a new species of something, but in the highly unlikely event that I'm giving any influence over what it's named, expect to see a new species of beetle named Bugulus bullshitus." Very good.
Excellent.
Pretty weird, Andy. Motorised canoe in Borneo. Pretty weird.
So, we've got to get on to the coat of arms, and thanks for the person who sent in an email on the subject of Andy's coat of arms. "Dear Andy, I know how much you like to hump a good pun, so I shit this one out for you. It's your very own coat of arms. Enjoy, from Oshina." And it is... I'll put it up on the Twitter feed, the @HelloBuglers Twitter feed. And it is, as you can imagine, a coat made of arms. So there you go. A visual pun.
It's so creepy.
But also wearing pink high heels. And standing on a drawbridge into a castle, possibly Bodiam Castle. I'm not sure.
Well, that's the beauty of the coat, that particular coat of arms, and you can dress it up, you can dress it down.
It is a bizarre outfit. I think I'm going to struggle to get to sleep at night. So we have the final vote. Voting is now officially closed on the coat of arms voting. Of the 7 billion potential Bugle listeners in the world, let's be honest, not all of them voted. But some of them did vote. We've had a couple of million votes come in.
Okay.
That's a slight exaggeration. But anyway, of those who voted, two clear front runners, coat of arms 5. Sent in by Lana in St. Petersburg, and Coat of Arms 6 by Amy Carter. Coat of Arms 6 has won it with 37% of the global votes versus 33% for Coat of Arms 5. But it's interesting that the two front runners, both designed by women, John. So I don't know what you can read into that modern heraldry.
Nothing.
Okay.
I think nothing. I think absolutely nothing.
Yep. Nothing.
But still, they were both excellent coat of arms. Yep.
Yes. So Amy Carter's won. I guess that's now the official Bugle coat of arms, featuring a bull shitting, a bird being flipped, and the slogan "Fludge Pontulius Nostri."
But I do think we should have a backup coat of arms in case of emergencies as well. So we should have the official coat of arms and then the backup coat of arms, which should be Lana's.
Yes, which has the $99 wine and dine and Florence Nightingale lifting her skirts. So anyway, you've won. There was a prize. Let's not forget this. There was a prize of the Charles and Diana commemorative cups, smashed or unsmashed, according to your preference. So you can both have a commemorative Charles and Diana. In fact, it might even come with a saucer as well. So you can specify if you want it smashed, unsmashed, or wrapped, unsmashed, but potentially smashed in transit. So do let me know how you want it. And we'll put them in the post to St. Petersburg and, I believe, somewhere in America, respectively. Well done. Long live democracy. That's it for this week's Bugle. Do keep your emails coming in to thebugle@timesonline.co.uk. Follow the Twitter feed @HelloBuglers. And we were going to do some sports this week, but we've run out of time because we've been crapping on about other stuff again. So just imagine your own sports section. Probably just be whinging about FIFA bribes. So there you go. But we'll be back next week with Bugle 154. Goodbye.
Goodbye, buglers! Oh, Pippa. Oh, Pippa.